It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Fred Zinke. Matthew Leach is off this week, and I'm happy to be joined by Al Melchior. Al, welcome to the show. Haven't talked to you in a few weeks. How are you doing?
Doing great, Fred. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. And we have maybe more to talk about this week. We always say we have a lot to talk about, but this week, I think with the trade deadline and these promotions, we have more to talk about than ever before. So let's get right to it. Al, I want to start with promotions. We'll start with Ahmed Rosario, who in my mind is the big game changer who was promoted this week. And I think maybe the biggest news of deadline day was the promotion of Rosario. What do you see coming up for him and him down the stretch as far as how much will he play? You know, how well will he hit? How many bases could he steal? Do you think he's someone who goes into the active lineup in every league right away? How optimistic are you on him?
Yeah, and I imagine that Rosario will play every day or at worst very, very close to every day. And I don't think you can expect a whole lot of power from him, and I don't think that it really matters because I think he's going to help you enough with steals, not be a liability with batting average. So, you know, I would expect him to hit the 270s, steal about 10 bases rest of season. And, I mean, not completely without power. That's just not going to be a real, you know, standout category for him. I think there'll be just enough there for him to crack. I would say, actually, I feel very confident, top 15 shortstops rest of season, which would, you know, put him in a 12-team mixed league, particularly a roto league, make him more than viable there.
Yeah, I'm of the mindset that, you know, owners should grab Rosario in any format just because of the upside. I mean, when these prospects get promoted, sure, they could fall flat on their face. He could hit 200 and gets dropped in a lot of leagues in 2 or 3 weeks. At the same time, you know, I think you have to just cut your least valuable player on the chance that he hits 300 right away, runs the bases aggressively. To me, I feel like he's a really natural leadoff hitter for a Mets team that doesn't have a natural leadoff hitter without him. I mean, they've been using Michael Conforto hitting leadoff, but I don't know if you agree with me, but I feel like Conforto really belongs hitting second, third, or fourth in that lineup.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And, as long as he is in the upper portion of the lineup, whether it's, you know, leadoff or second, that's going to help them with run production, obviously. So that's, yeah, I think the only thing, again, I don't look for from Rosario is a whole lot of home runs. But, I think pretty much every other category he should help you.
Yeah. Now we'll talk about someone who, in my mind, may be a bit of a lesser version of Rosario, and that's Ozzie Albies of the Braves. I was actually stashing Albies in one league, but I didn't really see him coming up right after the deadline when they didn't move Brandon Phillips, but he's up anyways, and it looks like he's going to play every day. What do you think about Albies really in comparison to Rosario, because that is a decision that some owners have been making? Do you think he could play as well as Rosario, play as often as Rosario, or is he more of a deeper format option?
I think he should play about as often as Rosario does, which means almost every day. But I do think that he is a bit of a deeper league option. And just on the side note, Fred, I'm actually glad to hear you say you didn't foresee this coming, because you just traded Brandon Phillips to me a few days ago.
I really didn't see it coming at all. I thought maybe Phillips would get traded at the deadline. But that wasn't That was an interesting trade. For those who are listening, I traded Al Manny Machado and Brandon Phillips for Dallas Keuchel and Cesar Hernandez. And I say the jury's way out on that deal, because Machado isn't hitting for power. Keuchel hasn't pitched well since he came back from the DL. I don't know what's going to happen to Phillips now. And, you know, Hernandez actually looked like a stable guy in the trade, and he wasn't really a big part of it in the beginning.
That's right. That's right. So it's only been about a weekend, but yeah, that's kind of funny how that played out. But, you know, back to Albies. I see him as more of sort of a one-dimensional contributor that I think he'll be good for steals. But beyond that, I'm not sure there's enough power there to even help him hit for a good average. So he's more of a deep league guy that you target if you need some steals.
Yeah, and I think lineups spot will be really important for Albies, same as it is for Rosario. You know, I often talk about how those are the types of players who either hit at the top or bottom of the lineup, not in the middle. So, and Phillips was hitting second on a regular basis for the Braves. So if Phillips isn't in the lineup, someone has to hit second. Right now, it's not going to be Albies. But if he got off to a nice start, if he had a nice batting average in a couple of weeks, then maybe he gets some chances higher in the lineup. I mean, like, why not give him those few extra plate appearances down the stretch? Let's move into the trades, because there were, I don't think this was as busy as some years at the trade deadline, but it was still plenty busy enough to keep us hopping today. And I'm going to start with the Yu Darvish trade, because I think he's the biggest name player to move on the deadline day. Do you like him better now that he's with the Dodgers?
I don't think I do. I think it's fantasy-wise a lateral move. He is going to a better offensive team. Although in terms of runs scored year to date, there's not that much of a difference. I do think the Dodgers are you know, trending in a good way. So you know, I'm not going to just completely nullify the impact that run support could have for Darvish, but I do worry about the park there. And I know he's coming from a park that wasn't particularly friendly, but Dodger Stadium has this reputation as being a pretty good pitcher's park. It's a good power-hitting park for left-handers, and Darvish has struggled a bit with left-handers, and particularly in terms of giving up extra base hits. So I could see him having a few stinkers, particularly in his home environment. And Dodgers have a much better bullpen now, so there's much less incentive to let him go longer into games. So I think it all kind of washes out.
Interesting. I felt a little more optimistic on him, partially just because the Dodgers are winning games at such a great rate. And as you said, they have that bullpen behind him, and he only has 6 wins. And I'm hoping he can maybe get 6 wins, 6 more wins just the rest of the way, just being part of a team that has such a good bullpen and is winning so much. I did worry about the innings a little bit because that seems to be their MO right now with some of their starters, getting them out early. We'll have to just wait and see. You can see reasons why they take Rich Hill out early, or a Brandon McCarthy or someone like that, because those pitchers are so injury prone. We'll just have to see with Darvish if they let him go 7 innings a lot. You know, if he's doing fine, do they just keep, let him go into 100, 105 pitches, 110 pitches, or does he follow what some of the Dodgers pitchers have been doing and coming out around 90 pitches? And that could cost him a few innings. But I think Darvish owners would be happy the way things have gone recently. If he just gets his 6 innings in and wins the game, that would certainly be good. Now let's jump now to the bullpen, and I feel like this happens every year at the trade deadline, where you can almost build in fantasy a whole new bullpen for your team just at the end of July. Brad Ziegler is now the closer in Miami. Brad Hand stuck with the Padres, so he's their closer now. You know, Shane Green's going to work the 9th inning in Detroit. AJ Ramos was a closer, and then for maybe a couple days, kind of not a closer, and now is a closer again, but with the Mets. Out of those 4 players, pitchers, which one, you know, do you most covet? Which one are you most concerned about? You know, what's your stance kind of on those 4 names?
Well, Brad Hand to me is really far above the other 3. And I don't even worry at this point about him getting traded, because it's been well reported that the Padres, and rightfully so, were asking for a really hefty return for him. And I just, you know, I don't see something happening in August with a deal there. They don't have a strong incentive either. I mean, he's under control for a couple more years. So he's the best strikeout pitcher out of the group. He's got the best control out of that group. He's got a pretty nice park. He's just been one of the better relievers in the majors the last couple of years. So to me, he's the one to target, but again, he's also the one that's probably going to be the most scarce. I don't have really strong concerns about the other 3, but I think I'm probably least enthused about going after Shane Green. In his favor, I don't think he's got any real competition there for the job. But and he's been very good for about the past month. But prior to that, wasn't very good. So I have real consistency concerns about Green that I don't have to the same degree about Ziegler or Ramos. Each of them have their own issues. Ramos, control, Ziegler, a little more contact-friendly, or maybe a lot more contact-friendly, but I think they'll both be fine.
Yeah, I agree with you on Hand being tops in that group. To me, Ziegler's second, I know Kyle Bearclaw could come back and put his name in kind of to get some safe chances, but I could also see Bearclaw has a lot of control issues. Ziegler has 80-something career saves, so I mean, he's got a lot of experience there. And if he's rolling along fine, I could see them just sticking with him. With Ramos, I think, he's last on the list just because I feel like when Juris Familia comes back, which is supposed to happen in August, that he just goes straight to the eighth inning. That being said, Familia's been out a while. We'll just see, you know, does he come back on time? Does he pitch well in his initial? I wouldn't be of the mindset to drop Ramos the second Familia comes back. I would want to see Familia pitch for a couple of weeks, stay healthy, you know, convert a couple save chances, and then I would drop Ramos. But I feel like out of the four of them, Ramos is the least likely to be a closer on September 1st just because of the presence of Familia. Do you agree with that?
I don't really. I don't. It seems pretty clear that the Mets are looking forward to 2018. I guess maybe just to kind of get Familia back in a groove and get him reaccustomed to the role. But the way I foresee it is just that they'll ease him back in and let Ramos take care of the ninth. But, you certainly can't dismiss that possibility. It just would seem odd to me that they would bring Familia back in the closer's role anytime. If they did it at all, you know, maybe like the last week or two of the season.
Yeah, it's definitely something that could go either way. I mean, we've seen teams bring their big-name closers back, and they just, boom, go right back to the ninth inning on kind of something on the lines of what you're referring to. The Orioles with Zach Britton, you know, pretty much throughout July, you know, we're pretty careful with using him and weren't using him on back-to-back days often, really, and weren't using him as their closer. And now he looks like he's probably their closer, but it did take a month. And if it takes Familia a month, then that's really the rest of the season or most of it. So we'll have to see what happens with Ramos. One other team a couple others, but the first one I want to go to is the Nats. Matthew and I seem to discuss the Nats closer's role every week. So we might as well keep that streak going. Sean Doolittle or Brandon Kinsler seem to be the options right now. Al, who's your pick out of those two to get more saves the rest of the way?
It should be Doolittle. I in any Dusty Baker team, I'm always very nervous about whoever the closer is. But Doolittle has not done anything since coming over, to cause to be lifted from the role. Kinsler's had a very nice year, but he has at this point the more extended recent track record of closing as compared to Doolittle. But I just think Doolittle's just the better reliever. He's in the role. Hasn't done anything to lose it. So I really am not speculating at all on Kinsler being put in there.
Yeah, I'm of the same mindset with Doolittle. I just think, I know Kinsler was successful as far as converting saves in Minnesota. I feel like Dusty Baker is going to be thinking about October really while he auditions a closer down the stretch. Like, that's really where the Nationals are headed, and that's really what will matter to them. You know, who can come in the ninth inning in a game in October and convert a save. And Kinsler, with that really low strikeout rate, like, I just feel it'd be really nerve-wracking to send him out, you know, two or three times in a series against the Cubs or the Dodgers or games in Colorado if that happened. And with that low strikeout rate, expect him to consistently convert saves. So that's why I like Doolittle. And they have enough lefties that they can use Doolittle. So, and the other team I wanted to talk about was the ninth inning. And I think this is probably the least attractive of all the ones we've mentioned so far, is the Twins. Who do you think gets the most saves the rest of the way in Minnesota? And do you want to own that player, you know, in a 10 or a 12 team league, or do you think any Twins reliever is just kind of AL only, maybe a 15 team league at this point?
Yeah, that, and I have to say probably more AL only than deep mix league. Because even in, you know, like our Tout Wars, league, Fred, that we're both in, that's 15 team mixed. I'm going to avoid that situation, and I need a closer. But I've had enough bad experience with spending bad money on closers who do me more harm than good. And I just fear that just about anybody that's in that role for the Twins is going to fall into that category. Now, if there's any sort of signs of Trevin Hildenberger being the Twins closer, I'm going to be interested in that. I'm not sure that I believe that the probability of that happening is high enough for me to actually devote resources to it right now. But to answer your original question, I would guess Taylor Rogers. And that was a hunch that I had back, I think, in February or March, that I didn't think Kinsler was going to last the year as a closer, not because of Trey, but just because I thought he'd pitch his way out of it. And I thought Rodgers would be the guy based on the nice season he had last year. He hasn't been quite as good this season. So I'm not that interested in Rodgers. I'm also not as confident that even if he gets the role, that he'll necessarily have it all to himself or that he won't lose it.
Yeah, as a symbol of how fast things change in bullpens, I picked up Rodgers in the Yahoo Friends and Family League around the 20th of July, and I remember specifically at the time I picked him up, he had a 1.93 ERA. And I thought, wow. And Rodgers leads the American League in holds. And I thought, wow, the American League leader in holds has a 1.93 ERA on a team where their closer is, you know, widely speculated in trade rumors. Like, this seems too good to be true, and it's a 14-team league. And sure enough, like, from those last, like, 10 days to the trade deadline, I think he was scored upon basically every time he went out there. And now, you know, that 1.93 ERA is long gone. I am still reminded of that this is someone who went through, you know, more than half the season, you know, faring quite well. So maybe he can get that back. At the same time, managers aren't really excited to send someone out who's been getting scored upon a lot, you know, for those next save chances. But I haven't given up on Rodgers yet. We'll just see kind of where that goes. Want to talk now about Jonathan Lucroy, because I think that's one of the really interesting trades in the sense of, I don't think fantasy owners, based on our Twitter chat sessions on Mondays, I don't think the fantasy owners could figure out what to do with Jonathan Lucroy prior to this trade. And now I think they even more can't figure out what to do with him, because just when they had completely written him off, or were starting to get to that point, now the Rockies pulled him back in. So are you optimistic on Lucroy? Like, do you put him back in the lineup in all your mixed leagues now, or what's your stance on him?
No, I'm really not more optimistic about Lucroy. And just to talk about this in terms of actions I've taken and not taken, I've been advising people, you know, all season long, you know, stick with them. Too much upside here, too much of a possibility that he gets back to being, you know, one of the top two or three catchers in fantasy. And finally, about 2 weeks ago, I started dropping him. I just, you know, there's enough. I mean, catcher is not, you know, a great position, not a lot of depth there. But, you know, there are enough options there that I was willing to take the chance in letting Lucroy go. And now that he's a member of the Rockies, in at least one league, I had an opportunity where in a league where I had dropped him, an opportunity to get him back. I didn't even try. Because Coors Field, I don't think, can make him hit fewer ground balls or make him hit them harder. And last I looked, and this is probably within the last two or three days, he had a hard contact rate of around 22%, and a ground ball rate that I think was in the mid-50s, I want to say 56%. That's not going to get it done no matter what altitude you're hitting at. So not to say he can't turn it around the last 2 months, but I'd just as soon actually go for the guy that's going to replace him, Robinson Chirinos, among you know, some other potential options.
Yeah, I think Chirinos is an interesting option in those deeper mixed leagues because he clearly has power. The batting average might be low, but we could say that about a lot of catchers. So
right.
I think Chirinos is interesting. One angle that some owners could take with Lucroy, depending on their bench size, is just use him when he's at home and don't use him on the road, and hope that just if he's in the lineup when the Rockies are at home and the team scores 5, 6, 7 runs, that somehow he's involved in some of that scoring, even if it's just him going, you know, 1-for-4 with an RBI and a run scored, is still a nice game for your catcher. So they could try to, you know, get him in and out of the lineup. Often Colorado's home for a week and then maybe on the road for a week. So you may be able, even in a weekly, you could do it. In a daily, it would be even easier to do. I want to mention one thing about Lucroy that I didn't put in our script. So I'll say to everyone that I'm going off script with Al here for a second. But Lucroy's really earned the reputation in the last year or two as not a great defensive catcher. And the Rockies pitchers were already facing an uphill battle, but some of them were doing okay this season, especially in a year where there aren't a lot of reliable pitchers and the Rockies are winning. Does Lucroy behind the plate make you less enthusiastic about using some of those marginal Rocky starters?
Well, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. I'd have to say no. You know, I guess, and partly that's more just about my reluctance to rely on Rockies starters this year. And yeah, they have as a group been much better than they've been in the past. But, you know, even John Gray, as far as somebody with his peripherals, as compared to maybe somebody who would have comparable peripherals. I have a little bit less trust in John Gray. Germán Márquez, I've had a real sort of dilemma about how much to buy into him. Kyle Freeland makes absolutely no sense to me. So I'm not sure that switching up the battery, I don't think it's going to make me any less confident than I already am.
I just thought, where those Rockies pitchers tend to fall, I find it's kind of like your last spot, like you say in a weekly league. Do I want to use Kyle Freeland in my last spot, or do I want to use John Gray in my last spot? Do I trust him in the start, especially if it's a home start? And Lucroy is just one more reason maybe to not trust them. Or if you're in a daily league and you're looking to stream down the stretch, again, especially for those home starts, but just in general, it's maybe one reason to not go with them.
I can see that, yeah.
Yeah, going to starting pitchers actually now, and I know we're jumping all over the positions, but I kind of want to move through them maybe in a little bit now that we got to the closers in terms of name value. Sonny Gray's with the Yankees. It's not a better ballpark. It is a better team. It's a better bullpen behind him. It's a better lineup. Is this an upgrade, a downgrade, or just kind of a wash for Gray?
I think it's a little bit of an upgrade. If perhaps Gray hadn't had as much of a track record as he does with getting ground balls, I think it'd be more of a dilemma for me to just figure out his rest of the season value. I do expect he'll give up a few more home runs, but I think he'll be fine. I think whatever the increases in his ERA is not going to be a game changer, and the increase in run support could be a game changer in a positive way. So I do think he has a little bit more value now as a Yankee.
Yeah, I do as well. And I will say that there's a perception out there that pitching in the AL East is really hard. And I totally get that in some seasons, but I will say that this year, while Gray doesn't have to face the Yankees, the Red Sox lineup hasn't been scoring that well this summer. Same with the Orioles, definitely the Blue Jays, and Tampa Bay's not an intimidating matchup. So he may have to work in some hitter-friendly parks, but the teams themselves, the Houstons, the Nationals, the Rockies, those teams aren't in the AL East. So this is probably a better year than most to be an AL East pitcher, especially if you're on the Yankees. And sticking with the Yankees, I wanted to mention Jordan Montgomery. Now, you own Montgomery in our Tout Wars League. I used to own him in our Tout Wars League. We discussed him while we were making that trade last week. Do you think Montgomery's time in the rotation is almost up?
I suppose so. The initial reports I was seeing when the Yankees were in the process of working out that Gray deal was that Garcia was going to go to the bullpen. But then since then, I've read things indicating that it'll be Montgomery. So to me, in a way, that would make more sense, actually, to demote Montgomery's role as opposed to Jaime Garcia's. But, my concern with Montgomery is just that he hasn't really been the same pitcher the last month or so, maybe month and a half even, that he was earlier in the year, giving up a lot more home runs. So, talking about those AL East parks, that's mm-hmm. a real concern. So I think even if Montgomery stays in the rotation, using that Tout Wars leak as an example, I don't know if I'd be ready to drop him there yet, but it's much more of a reasonable option at this point than it was, I'd say, even a couple weeks ago when you and I were talking trade. So, and another bad starter too, and I probably will drop him. So in that format, yeah, I think Montgomery's droppable, and I think in deeper formats than that, it's time.
So I agree. Staying in the AL East, Lucas Duda is now a member of the Rays. Is this an uptick? Because he's someone who's widely available in 10 and 12 team leagues and has been quietly pretty powerful this season and, is going to finish in the mid to high 20s probably in home runs. He's in a better lineup now. Would you be looking, say, in a 12-team league if Duda's available? Does this make him a little more appealing to you?
A little more, but in that depth of a format, I still think he's not on my radar other than as a streamer. And the thing is, he probably will be on my radar more as a streamer because of what we've been talking about with all those good AL East parks, not so much his home park, but pretty much all of the visiting ones. There are going to be weeks where, if he's in those parks facing a lot of righties, like you said, Duda's available, and let's say it's a league where I've got Mark Reynolds and he's not at Coors, Duda would be a great guy to slide in for that week. So that's kind of how I view him. I'm not really ready to commit to him as a must-start guy outside of deeper leagues.
Right. And I'm going to skip to someone who is probably maybe a little more valuable than Lucas Duda. Actually, to me, they're about the same, but I think he's more widely owned. And I'm going to go to Melky Cabrera, who's back with the Royals. Does going from the White Sox to the Royals do anything to change Cabrera's value for you?
I don't think so, because he's not somebody I worry about the venue so much. He's staying in the division. It's more of a righty-lefty thing with him. And again, being in the division, that's not going to change a whole lot. He's going, you know, from one team that's got some lefties in the rotation to another team that's kind of the same. So it seems like kind of an equal trade there. So yeah, I think it's pretty much a lateral move.
Yeah, I thought maybe a slight uptick just because we see kind of the direction the White Sox lineup seems to be going, where not that Todd Frazier was hitting well, but he had the potential to hit well, and he's gone, and Melky's gone, and Abisail Garcia's on the DL, and the White Sox lineup's starting to look pretty thin, whereas the Royals are a little more, going for it, putting out their best lineup all the time. So but I don't think it's a big change really in his value. And Melky's someone who has a little bit of value in, like, to me, in like a 12-team league and deeper, where he can hit close to 300, but there's not a lot of power, there's no speed, so not really a 10-team option. Now, a couple other guys who have been deep league options, Jorge Bonifacio, I'd say was pretty widely owned in 15-team leagues, pretty widely owned in 12-team leagues. Brandon Moss was starting to generate a little bit of buzz in the second half. Are those players, now that Cabrera's there, kind of just droppable in all the mixed leagues?
Yeah, Moss definitely. And Bonifacio, I think so. You mentioned 12-team leagues. I think he is, no longer a good use of a roster spot in a 12-team league. And 14, 15, I think I would hang on to him in those formats just to kind of see how the playing time shakes out for him. His value certainly goes down quite a bit with this with the trade.
Yeah, and for me, owners that maybe wanted to replace Bonifacio with someone, it's a different skill set, but it's an outfielder. I'm a little bit excited about Leury García of the White Sox. He has some speed. He's shown a little bit of pop this season. He's hitting leadoff for them, not every game, but often lately. He should play every day. With steals at a premium, I think that Garcia is someone that should be owned at least in those deeper formats. Are you feeling any of my enthusiasm for Garcia, or are you like not really interested in him still?
No, I absolutely agree with you. And I think that's, the right way to frame it. I agree with you on that, that bit of a power speed combination, I haven't really felt the need to go after him in a 12-team mixed league, but pretty much anything that's deeper than that, I think he can have some real value. And I'm even a little bit excited about Alan Hansen in the other outfield corner, not as much power potential, but like you said, steals are at a premium, and I think Hansen could get them too. So I like both of them in deeper leagues.
Yeah, and I think that maybe Garcia and Hansen, I think there's a good point there for fantasy owners where, well, the baseball world is going to be primarily focused down the stretch on all these contending teams. It's often the rebuilding clubs where you can nab some underrated fantasy value, because those are the clubs that are flying under the radar, but they're the clubs that are trying out some new players and giving younger players or less experienced players some expanded roles. And that's where I was surprised. I grabbed Garcia in the Friends and Family League. That's waivers. In the Labor Mixed League, which is 15 teams, I was the only one to bid on him. And I actually bid a few dollars because I expected that some other people had just put in at least, it's a $100 fab league. And I thought some people would put in at least a dollar or two. But sometimes I wonder if the players on those under the radar teams, like I said, they also fly under the fantasy radar as well. So probably a good idea to keep track of them. I wanted to mention one other player, and this one's not on the script, so sorry about that, Al. But Derek Fisher, from the Astros trade with the Blue Jays. Derek Fisher seems to be moving now into more of a full-time role with the Astros while we're just talking about outfielders. Are you liking Fisher as someone who could even get into 10-team leagues? Because in my mind, although I like Garcia, I like Fisher better, and Fisher was pretty widely owned available at the trade deadline. Do you think Fisher is someone who could even get into 10-team leagues? Because he has some power, some speed, and he's hitting in the highest-scoring lineup in baseball.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, he's in a whole different class from Garcia, and yeah, absolutely 12-team leagues. I would say 10-team leagues too. I don't have as much question about Fisher's playing time now that Aoki was traded. You know, Springer may not be out for that long, but I think even when Springer comes back, that I would expect that it'd be Mariznick more so than Fisher. That loses playing time. So, yeah, even in 10-team leagues, and the great thing is when you take a flyer with somebody that's got the kind of upside that Fisher has in a 10-team league, if it doesn't work out, there's so many viable waiver options that you're really not risking anything. So, yeah, I like Fisher just about everywhere.
Yeah, that was my thought. In a 10-team league, you just grab him because he's playing every day in a high-scoring lineup now, and you worry about what's going to happen in a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks when it happens because you know there will be outfielders on waivers. And in those deeper leagues, he's already a must-own, and you hope you found kind of a lottery ticket in him. At the very least, you found a part-time player in a great lineup. Tim Beckham, now moving over back to the AL East, Tim Beckham is now a member of the Orioles. He was once a good prospect, hasn't done a lot in the majors, but has had some stretches where he has been okay. Do you think that this could maybe revive him a little bit as far as the Orioles are a team that, you know, has a lot of power hitters? They maybe kind of fit his style a little bit as far as some of the other players they've had on their team the last few years. It's a better park to hit home runs. Could he turn into more of a power hitter if he can have an everyday role with Baltimore? And what leagues would you want to own him?
Yeah, I think in terms of upside, maybe he sort of becomes a mirror to Jonathan Scope, a similar type of hitter, and there'd certainly be nothing wrong with that. I'm not sure that he gets there, but I think that's the upside for Beckham. So, you know, that said, I'm not interested in Beckham in a 12-team mixed league. I think that there's just, you know, there's other, shortstop is not quite what I had hoped or expected it would be this year, but I still think there's enough options. I would much, much rather have Rosario than Beckham. But, in deeper mixed leagues, I think he's a good one to own.
Yeah, I could see. I think the Orioles, they seem to be pretty comfortable with these players who can hit for power but have a really poor strikeout-to-walk ratio. Even Adam Jones, right, Mark Trumbo, like these players that don't really walk a lot, but they can hit the ball out of the yard. And that's, the Orioles seem to be comfortable letting those guys kind of do their thing. So I'm interested to see now, maybe it's not a big interest down the stretch, but it could be a little bit. I'll be interested to see next year if he's a starting player for the Orioles, what he can do. And to wrap up our trade talk, I'm going to just look at a couple players who are probably droppable in most formats, but kind of let our listeners know if there's any level you would still want to keep them. We'll start with two relievers, Justin Wilson and Addison Reed. Would you drop them in every mixed league? Would you hold either one of them in 15-team leagues or anything shallower than that?
Yeah, in the deeper mixed leagues, like 15 teams, I think it's kind of a borderline call, especially with Reed, just because if something were to happen with Kimbrel, he would be the obvious replacement. But, I just think, even in that depth of a format, chances are you may be already stashing one or two potential closers and waiting. And I just think that the probability of Reed seeing the ninth inning, you know, maybe more than once or twice, you know, in case Kimbrel goes a bunch of days in a row, I think it's really, really slim. With Wilson, you know, it's maybe just a tick greater of a probability that he gets some saves just because Wade Davis has been a little inconsistent the last couple of months. But, I wouldn't make it a big priority to keep either one in pretty much any sort of a mixed league.
Yeah, I mean, one thing about stashing a good setup man who's behind a good closer like you would be in this situation, when you do that in March or April, what you're doing is you're kind of betting that good closer will have an injury at some point during a six-month stretch, and then your Justin Wilson or your Addison Reed will get a chance to fill in and be quite valuable for you, whether it's for a couple weeks or a month or 6 weeks, we don't really know. Kind of like what a lot of owners did with a Brad Brock or someone this year. You knew he wasn't going to overtake Zach Britton, but you grabbed him for the ratios and you hoped that there was a stretch over 6 months where he would be the closer and it worked out. Well, once we get to the point where there's less than 2 months left in the season, obviously your odds that Wade Davis or Craig Kimbrel in these cases suffer an injury are they're cut by 2/3. So, and they're healthy going like right now and rolling, so it seems less likely. So it makes it a little, you know, more daunting of a gamble. So I would feel free of dropping them in any league, and, you know, you could hold them if you really don't like anyone on waivers in those 15-team leagues. And the last player I wanted to mention is Alex Avila. I would drop Avila in all the mixed leagues now that he's on the Cubs. Are you with me on that?
Yeah, in fact, in Tout Wars, I tried to do that last week, and the way that I had my FAB claim set up, he didn't get dropped, because of the contingencies that I had, but he's probably gone this week. So, yeah, no, I don't, even on a Joe Maddon team, I don't see the scenario where Avila starts more than a couple times a week.
Yeah, it would have to take an injury to Wilson Contreras, and again, that's unlikely to happen. So, and you can always go back and look for him if that happens. Before we move on, we want to take a minute to tell you about the MLB Pipeline podcast, which focuses on all things draft and prospect related. MLB's Pipeline draft and prospect gurus, Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, talk about what's going on in the universe of MLB's future stars. Last week's episode featured an in-depth breakdown of the recently updated Pipeline top 100 prospects list, and then an interview with the number 59 prospect, Padres shortstop Fernando Tatis Jr. To hear all that and more, search for MLB Pipeline in Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts, and click subscribe. Just want to mention with that updated Pipeline top 100 list, that's something that owners should obviously, we plugged that a lot, should be very familiar with. I went to that right away when they updated. I was really excited to see where certain players had moved on it. I mean, when you see us leading off a show with Amed Rosario and Ozzie Albies, you realize how important understanding these prospects is to getting ahead of your fantasy league. And these are the best. Jim Callis, Jonathan Mayo are the best at telling you, in-depth scouting reports on these players so that you have a good opinion when they come up of whether or not you want to grab them. So, and I'll openly admit when these prospects come up, Callis and Mayo are the first place I go and to read their work and find out, what they think of a player before I kind of meld it into what fantasy owners should think. So definitely something for everyone to check out, that updated top 100 list, and see where everyone is right now. Now back to the show, and we're going to talk about some injured players. We're going to do a little bit of a rapid-fire segment with some players who are on the DL right now, and we're going to get Al's opinion. And Al, I'm going to give you three options, and your three options will be keep that player in all your leagues, keep that player only in the deep leagues, or drop that player in basically all the mixed leagues. Okay, so keep in every league, drop them in, keep them just in like a deeper mix, or drop them in all the mixed leagues. And we'll start with Johnny Cueto, who's had additional troubles now while he's already on the DL with a blister. Where are you at with Cueto? Keep in the deep leagues or drop altogether?
I would keep him in the deep leagues. I do have him in one 12-teamer. I nearly cut him last week, and that was even before this latest development with him. So he's probably going to be gone for me in that 12-team league. But 15-team deeper, I think he's still worth the stash.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It would be hard to let go of someone who you drafted probably as an ace even in a 10-team league, but especially with the lack of run support that's likely there in San Francisco and now these other injury problems on top of the blister. So, yeah, sticking with starting pitchers, David Price, where are you at with Price?
I'm keeping him in all leagues right now. He before this latest injury, he was going pretty well. I mean, not the last, I think, start or two, but he seemed to be getting in a groove. I hold out some hope that he could still help me maybe in September.
Next starting pitcher, Lance McCullers.
Yeah, I'm keeping him in all leagues as well. And hey, if you look at the glass half full interpretation of this, maybe this is why he's been off for the last several starts. And maybe McCullers can get right. And same with Price, down the stretch, maybe even for a longer part of it, he can help you a lot.
And to tie those three starting pitchers together, Cueto, Price, and McCullers, if you could own one for the rest of the season, which one would you pick?
Definitely McCullers.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Now we're going to talk hitters. How about Dustin Pedroia, who's hitting for average, but not a lot of power, not a lot of speed. Where are you at with keeping him?
I wouldn't say I'd universally drop him. In fact, I think I'd have a hard time dropping him in a deep mixed league. So I'm going to say just in the 12 in the team. 10 and 12 teamers.
Now, how about Ian Desmond?
I'm going to say same thing, even though he's been hurt so much, he hasn't really produced this year. But you know, I still think that there's too much skill there. And of course, you know, the Coors, potential Coors effect, that I'm willing to dedicate a spot to him in anything deeper than a 12-team league.
And how about Matt Kemp, who, when he first went on the DL, I thought might be a short absence, but now it might be a little longer than I first thought and maybe a little more extended. Where are you at with Kemp?
I'm all for keeping Kemp in every format. I could see the argument. In fact, I think somebody's asked me a Twitter question where it was, do I drop Kemp for so-and-so? And it was kind of a shallow league, and I think I said it was okay. But it would have to be a pretty extreme situation where it was a very shallow league. It was a very you had no other options. I just don't think that those situations are going to be very likely. So I'd say with, 95-96% certainty that I would keep Kemp in even the shallowest formats.
And the last injured player we're going to talk about just went on the DL yesterday. One of the most unique fantasy assets, in my opinion, because he's owned in almost every league and he doesn't get wins and he doesn't get many saves, is Andrew Miller. If you own Miller, even though he's so widely owned, would you consider dropping him in those shallow leagues just because he's not a closer and he's not a starter? Or do you think you have to stash him and hope that you get – is it hard to stash someone who you're really hoping you get maybe a dozen innings or 15 innings out of once he comes back from the DL?
Well, like you said, I mean, he's very unique. But I just think, if you've held him for the first 4 months of the season, held or, been using either way, he's going to have, I think, that same kind of appeal whenever he comes back. So he's not necessarily somebody I would be owning in every format, but if I did have him, even if it was a shallow format, and he played a role on my team, I'd want to keep him around.
Yeah, I can see that. I think Miller's is a really tough call. I think he might, more than the other players, depend on where you are in your league standings. And are you willing, do you want to use a spot for him to stash him to get those hopefully 15 innings of hopefully low ratios? He's a really interesting one, but I would have a hard time walking away from him as well. Let's finish with two-start pitchers. And we'll start. We've got Jordan Zimmermann at the Pirates and home to the Twins. J.C. Ramirez, home to Baltimore at Seattle. Brent Suter at the Twins, home to the Reds. Matt Moore home to the Cubs and at the Nationals. Yolish Sasin at the Reds and at the Dodgers. And Trevor Williams, home to Detroit and at Toronto. There are some interesting names here, especially for those in deeper mixed leagues. Al, who do you like the best out of that group? Maybe give us a couple names that you would look to add.
I'm glad you let me off the hook with just having to go with just one, because because these guys are available, there's obviously, going to be some risk and some flaw. But of the six, to me, the clear standouts are J.C. Ramirez and Brent Suter. And I guess if you forced me to pick one, I'd go with Ramirez, just because I generally like him at Angel Stadium. He's got the Orioles, who could certainly, even in a big park, hurt him with the long ball. But they're a very, very aggressive team that is. They've made some wild pitchers look really stingy with walks. And Ramirez's control has been inconsistent. So that would be one less worry with Ramirez. And then you got the good ballpark. And then at Seattle, that's a pretty decent matchup and a pretty decent venue. So that works for me. And then Suter, I'm not quite exactly sure how he's doing. He did kind of hit a wall last night. But at the Twins, home versus Cincinnati, again, not the greatest matchups and venues, but not the worst either. So, he's, despite very low velocity, he's been getting a good number of strikeouts, and find him intriguing.
Yeah, I'm with you that those are, I think, the two best options. I can't touch Matt Moore in a week where he goes to Washington, as inconsistent as he's been. And you and I think, both have a little bit of interest at times in Yolish Sasin. I can't use him in road starts at Cincinnati and then against the Dodgers. To me, Zimmermann and Trevor Williams, who coincidentally will face each other in their first start of the week, are kind of that middle group out of the six where I think you have to be feeling pretty good about your ratios or not really caring about your ratios to use them. But if you did want to use them, Williams has been decent of late. He gets the Tigers at least at home where they wanted the DH. And then Toronto hasn't been scoring much. And then Zimmerman has been bad for about a year and a half with the Tigers, but he has been better of late and has had some seven inning starts, including that nice one at Yankee Stadium yesterday. So, you know, you get him in a National League game and then you get him at home against the Twins lineup that doesn't really scare me. So, like I said, you'd have to be feeling pretty good or pretty bad about your ratios to try them. But those are kind of the mid-tier options for me. And I think that does it for us. We managed to jam a lot of topics into a pretty short amount of time. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And thanks, Al Melchior, for taking the time to talk.
Always my pleasure, Fred. Thanks.